Good afternoon, members. I'll call the Education Policy Committee to order. Thank you, folks. We have the minutes for the last meeting. Representative Sandell, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have, and I suggest I move approval of the minutes.
Representative Sandell moves the approval of the minutes from Tuesday, March 10th, 2020. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The minutes for the Tuesday, March 10th, 2020 have been approved. So, members, we have a little change on the schedule, just to let you know. We are doing Representative Edelson's bill first, then Freiberg, then Murphy, then Hassan Bierman. So, right now we have House File 3852 before us. Representative Christensen, would you like to move House File 3852 with the intentions of going to the General Register?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Wonderful. So we have before us House File 3852 with the intentions of it moving to the General Register. Representative Edelson, would you like to start by presenting your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I will keep this pretty brief. This was a fix over the summer. Senator Chamberlain, myself, Decoding Dyslexia, the School Board Association, Ed Minnesota, and MDE all met together to just do some tweaks. We passed a piece of legislation last year that required that if you were not reading at grade level, that you would be screened for characteristics of dyslexia. So we wanted to do some clarification because the report is going to be starting this year, and we wanted to make sure with the report that it actually mimics what we're going to be doing. So this is just clarifying language that is agreed to, and I'll just move straight to my testifier, Justin.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Justin Killian. I work for Education Minnesota in the Policy Department. Today I'm here to offer our support for House File 3852, which is clarifying some reporting requirements as it's related to dyslexia screening in schools. We want to thank Representative Edelson for her leadership on this important issue and say that we've appreciated sitting on the Dyslexia and Literacy Roundtable that's been led by Senators Chamberlain and Clausen and Representative Edelson. This bill comes from the efforts of that group. It's been a bipartisan working group, and all of the organizations that have been part of it are proud to support this bill. In 2019, Minnesota tested the reading proficiency of over 64,000 third graders, and only 35,036 of those were proficient in reading at grade level. That's only 54.6%. If you take those numbers and look at specific demographics, specifically children of color, we tested 7,445 black students that were in the third grade, and only 2,414 were proficient, which means only 32.4%. These are not numbers that Minnesota needs to be proud of, and these are numbers that we need to work to fix. And this bill gets us towards getting the data we need to do that. We see childhood literacy as a social justice issue, and we agree with the American Library Association, who said that all people must have equitable access to the skills and resources they need to fully participate as literate individuals in society, to communicate, analyze, criticize, synthesize, and create information. This bill will help get us there and help us get the data we need to make smart decisions as a state. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Killian. Is there anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, we'll go to member questions. Members, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Killian, when you said we tested, to whom were you referring?
The state of Minnesota. Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, the state of Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Do you work for the state of Minnesota?
Dr. Killian?
No, I work for Education Minnesota.
Then I think, Madam Chair, you would identify it as the State Department of Education, not we.
Madam Chair, I apologize, Madam Chair. I was using the collective we as in, like, we the people of Minnesota. But, yes, to clarify, I do not work for the Department of Education. I work for the Teachers Union. So that can be clarified. And the Department of Education tested those students.
Thank you, Dr. Killian. Any other member questions? Seeing none, any further comments, Representative Allison?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I just hope members can support this legislation.
Thank you. Members, we will renew the motion that House File 3852 be placed on the General Registry. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. House File, all those opposed, sorry. House File 3852 has been placed on the General Register. The motion prevails and House File 3852 has been recommended for placement on the General Registry. Sorry, I was starting to get Representative Hornstein does that. He does it so fast. I have to not do that. So next we have Representative Freiberg. Would you like to join us? And then Representative Kunesh-Budin, would you like to move Representative Freiberg's bill?
I so move.
Representative Kunesh-Budin moves House File 2198 to be re-referred to the Education Finance Committee.
Exactly. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And, Representative Freiberg, I believe you have an amendment.
I do. Yes, if she could move that as well, that would be great.
Representative Kunesh-Budin, would you like to move the amendment coded DE4?
I so move.
Representative Kunesh-Budin moves author's amendment DE4. Representative Freiberg, would you like to describe your amendment?
Sure. It makes a few technical changes from the original bill, a couple non-technical changes. I think it ended up just being easier to do it as a DE amendment. I can just describe the bill if you want, since my testimony is prepared.
Okay, well, let's just get the bill in the shape that you'd like to discuss it in front of the committee. So the DE4 amendment has been moved. Any questions on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor of the DE4 amendments, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? The DE4 amendments adopted. Representative Freiberg, proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. House File 2198 is a bill which is designed to more fully integrate service learning into our education system. Passage of this bill will create greater opportunity and success for young people throughout Minnesota in their college, career, and community life. At the same time, it will lead to positive community contributions tied to academic standards and build the aspirations of children and youth. This bill emphasizes the role of young people as active learners and leaders. It encourages the building of relationships and social-emotional skills. Our journey in the development of this bill began as early as 2013 when we met with various stakeholders. In 2014, we had meetings of education and community leaders, including students. We convened these at the Capitol to discuss topics related to the bill and begin the process of moving forward. Early in the refinement of the service learning bill, Paula Bugin, who's sitting next to me and will speak next, and I met with a group of local youth to learn their views about the bill. In addition, a previous Minnesota Youth Council heard and unanimously passed the service learning bill. Since that time, more feedback from a variety of stakeholders has been woven into the bill, and the result is the bill we are presenting today. So according to the Minnesota Department of Education website, service learning is a form of experiential learning whereby students apply content knowledge, critical thinking, and good judgment to address genuine community needs. Let's acknowledge and support the power and potential of our children and youth and provide them with opportunities they deserve and need in order to maximize their success. So with me to present today are Paula Bugin, who has years of experience in this field, and Sage Hartman, who's in the eighth grade, and who will briefly share her perspective about service learning and the bill.
Thank you both for being here. Go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Paula Bugin. Chair Joachim, members of the committee, House File 2198 is our opportunity to create a brighter, more hopeful future together with Minnesota students. This bill emphasizes that our children and youth learn so much about their world and what they need to know academically when they learn by doing and have a voice in how they go about it. With passage, it will demonstrate how valuable students are as contributors to their communities, and it will transform the lives of many. The partnerships that are part of the bill will help students build relationships and social capital. Those who are getting ready for post-secondary education and/or employment are likely to have networks, role models, and recommendations to help them achieve their goals. Through passage of this bill, we will discover, advance, and spread high-quality service learning aligned with Minnesota World's best workforce goals, or the plan submitted and approved under the most recent authorization of the ESEA and state or local academic standards. Students will experience a sense of real-world accomplishment. We need to draw out and build upon the strengths and passions of all of our students and attract more students to stay engaged in school. Here is a Minnesota example of how service learning helped to set a person's life. This example is from a Minnesota nonprofit. A high school student participated in service learning at a nonprofit that serves people with disabilities. The student graduated from high school, went to college, became a summer employee at that nonprofit while working at a corporation, and she brought employees to serve the nonprofit, and she has helped the nonprofit to look for employment for people with disabilities. Through multifaceted service learning in one school district, this happens to be a school district in Missouri near St. Louis, between 2009 and 2014, the percentage of high school students scoring proficient or advanced on state tests in algebra rose from 37 to 59 and 17 to 86 respectively. In biology, the increase was 25 to 70%, and in English, it rose from 37 to 69% in that district. That's from District Administration Magazine, A Revolution in K-12 Service Learning, January 5, 2019. The link is available if someone wants it. According to a 2008 Engage for Success Civic Enterprises key finding, 83% of students, 90% of African Americans, 83% of Hispanics say they'd enroll or probably enroll in service learning if their school offered it. Here are quotes from two different Minnesota students. Quote, service learning makes me want to come to school because it is not the same thing all the time, unquote. The other student, quote, sometimes students need something more hands-on than sitting in a classroom. They find out what their strengths are, unquote. Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much. And would you like to go ahead, Sage, and state your name for the record and proceed?
Sage Hartman. Chair Joachim and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to share my thoughts. My name is Sage Hartman. I'm in eighth grade and I live in Plymouth. Some background I have with service learning is Destination Imagination, where I did a service learning project with students my age. In Destination Imagination, we focused on organic recycling. This helped me learn things I need to know about science. Sadly, this was after school, and I noticed people I know wanted to be involved with it, but they couldn't due to expense and transportation problems. In addition to service learning, during school, the students can do service learning after school as well, if they would like to. This book gives youth amazing opportunities to help the world become a better place and learn their daily curriculum on a regular school day. One thing I really like about this bill is that it provides a new learning technique that helps students learn quicker and better and makes school a more interesting, friendly, and welcoming environment. I've learned that service learning is a great way to learn new things we need to learn in the school day and help others at the same time. This bill would not only help students my age learn the daily curriculum, it would help us learn ways to make the world a better place. Thank you for supporting this bill and passing it to the next committee.
Thank you. Good job. Is there any, Representative Freiberg, do you have anything else to add, or I'll open it up to see if there's any other testifiers?
That'd be fine.
Any other testifiers in the audience? And we'll go to member questions then, seeing them. Representative Baker, and then I'll have Erdahl.
Madam Chair, and Sage, thank you for sharing your story. It sounds like this has been a great project, and I know my son was involved in, was it Imagine Discovery? I missed that again.
Destination Imagination.
Madam Chair, thank you. That's what I thought. Maybe this is more of a question to Representative Freiberg, and when I was raising my kids, we thought this was super important. You know, service to the community. When our kids went to church and Wednesday night classes, we did bingo at the nursing home. And the volunteering, and to me, is one of my core beliefs that we've got to do this. Bringing this bill forward, I think, is a good idea. But I'm trying to get to the but. And I'm trying to understand if we need to do this in our curriculum in school, or do we do this at home? I think that's the balancing point that we're trying to get to. And I think with mom sitting there too, I think I understand what she was saying too, because so my questions to you, Representative Freiberg, is how will we know if this is successful? What is the measuring part if we do this pilot project? How will we know this is something that we should consider continuing on? Is there a vision that you see that we will know that it's working?
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Representative Baker. Certainly, volunteering through the home, I think, is critically important. I mean, I do think it's important to recognize that it, not, you know, there, not everyone is available to do that to the extent you and me might be. Some people might be single parents and might not have the time to do that. But I think the studies show that school-based service learning projects have the potential to bring up student performance. You can tie them to academic standards. They have lots of value. Ms. Bugin can speak to it. I know she's worked in this field for many years, and she can provide a lot of data on that too. As far as how to know this is successful, the bill does include an evaluation component. If you go to line 4.9 of the amendment that we adopted, I can read it to you, but you know, I do think it's very important to know this is working as well. So I thought it was important that there be an evaluation component.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, just to follow up, and do you see this happening during the school day, or is this more after school, or will this replace any of the current course requirements?
Representative Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Baker, I think that would be up to the individual school districts to decide. I mean, when I was in high school, the school I went to set aside basically the month of May for service learning type projects. And I did, I remember I did one. We went to a school with many students who did not have English as their native language. So, and it was just helping them, kind of tutoring them and helping them with their assignments and so forth. And it was a very valuable experience, I found, to me. And in that case, it was part of the school. It was during the school day.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I thought Imagination Destination was trying to put together a bonding bill. But that's another topic. This is something that, you know, I've encouraged and been working on myself. And thank you, Sage, for coming by my office this afternoon. We actually have in our state standards, our social studies standards, references to learning by doing and experiential learning. My civics legislation, I have included that. You know, learning by doing is important. Emphasis is placed upon the test, but it's much more than the test. To me, the test is just a jumping off point to do these other things. And unfortunately, they didn't quite make it through the process last time, but maybe this time, because you are evidencing something today that I think is very important in our education system. The fact that it's not just all the book work, not just all the testing, but also you can learn by doing things.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Sage, for your testimony. That was very impressive. But, Madam Chair, I'd like to call Mr. Uni to the testifying table, if I may.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Uni, based on 120B.018 subdivision 4, do we need legislation to provide for service learning, or what I would also call project-based learning? If you look at the or of subdivision 4.
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, could you repeat the statute, please? I just need to.
120B.018, subdivision 4. It's under the definition of credit.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, my apologies. I don't have the answer for that at this moment.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Mr. Uni, I don't have it in front of me, but as I recall, it says mastery of academic skills or mastery of what has been assigned. So it seems to me that schools could go ahead and provide for project-based learning or service learning once they make that decision amongst their staff, and the children would receive the required credits for that, or that would be in place of the credits, because the policy would be set within the district that they have mastered whatever was assigned, and so they would then have the equivalent of the credit. So my struggle, Mr. Uni, is that I don't think we need legislation to do this. I think districts, schools can do this And that was one place I found that I thought could justify my belief.
Representative Mr. Uni or Representative
Fazio? Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I would say that's a policy decision for the proponents around whether they want to incentivize districts to offer these types of programs. So I would defer to the author and the advocates on that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, now I have the or in front of me. Under the definition of credit, of course, they've successfully completed an academic year of study. Then after the or, it's mastered the applicable subject matter. So it seems to me that we don't honor that phrase well enough to offer these kinds of learning opportunities in our schools, when actually I think it's already in statute. Just something for us to think about, Madam Chair, because I don't know if we always need a law.
Representative Freiberg.
Sure, I did pull up that citation. I mean, it's in the definitions section, so I don't know how it ties in exactly to the overall structure of the statutes. I do see it here. I mean, I guess just generally speaking, I do think this creates a position within the department, so it builds expertise at the state level. Even if there is nothing that would prevent a school from doing that, I mean, one thing we certainly hear from school districts is that we're placing unfunded mandates on this and on them and so forth. So this does set up a grant program to give them additional resources to do them, and sets up some guidelines around that too that are tied to the ways to make it most effective, like working with community organizations and so forth. So that would be my responses to generally why I think it's important.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. One more follow-up.
Yeah, just a final statement. Well, Madam Chair, I don't discount the fact that there might be money needed, but I'm not sure we need a specialist at the department. I have a lot of faith in schools and districts to design programs like this, but money for extras might work, and maybe someone in a department, we wouldn't have to create something new, who would be able to give, like our regional centers of excellence, some advice.
Representative Christensen.
I'll just say real quick. Thank you, Madam Chair, by the way. I was a service learning coordinator at a middle school very early in my career, and it was very satisfying, and there's so much for kids to learn from going out and learning about other cultures and learning about science and being able to learn outside of the walls of the classroom. It, believe it or not, it has much more value often with students if they can do that. So I really support the service learning program. I agree that not all kids would ever have an opportunity to do this at home, do some of the projects at home. So thanks for bringing the bill forward. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other member questions? Anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, I think Representative Freiberg, you've got the final word.
I appreciate the committee's consideration of this bill. I think it's an important one, so thank you.
Thank you. Members, I'll renew the motion that House File 2198, as amended, be re-referred to Education Finance Division. Any question on the motion? Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? House File 2198, as amended, is recommended and to be re-referred to the Education Finance Division.
Thank you.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Freiberg. And up next is Representative Murphy. Members, we have House File 3992 before us. And Representative Mulder, would you like to move House File 3992 with the recommendation that go to Ed Finance?
So moved, Madam Chair.
House File 3992 has been moved with recommendation to go to Education Finance. Representative Murphy, would you like to present your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I appreciate so much this opportunity to come before you and ask for your support. Central High. this isn't a bill that I would normally bring before you. There's another policy that I wouldn't ordinarily support. with the enthusiasm that I do about this critical stage in ISD 709. Kathy Erickson is here as a business person, as a business financial business person in educational funding. Before she came to ISD 709, she worked with the Lake Superior School District and with all the Northeastern Minnesota ECSUP. If I had questions as state representative about financing and education, I would call Kathy. Because she always had an approach to the answers or a different solution than I would ever imagine, and sometimes even more than Tim Strom would even imagine. Kathy is a constituent. Bill Gronseth is the superintendent of schools and has been since 2012. When I was a teacher in 709, Bill Gronseth was a teacher in 709. That's how I knew of him then.
That's a long time ago.
But I've only come to know him walking through the neighborhood. He lives in my district in Hermantown. But he was hired after the Red Plan, and he's been picking up issues to settle ever since the Red Plan, which changed the school districts of Duluth, all the schools in Duluth. He is a bold and innovative superintendent that has boldly sighed and accepted every new problem that came along and tried to reach solutions and tried different solutions with the people that were there and had sometimes created those problems. And now he's trying to create another solution that is not easy and will not be easy. And not particularly popular, but it's something that has to be done. And so I will let Kathy and Superintendent Gronseth, Ms. Erickson, tell you about their plight and tell you about House File 3992. But it's not just happened. It was well thought out, and it is a solution that should be addressed, not only by the state legislature, but by citizens of Duluth and ISD 709.
It's a tragedy to see this.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Murphy, Superintendent, or Ms. Erickson, who would like to go first? Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Joachim, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. As Representative Murphy said, I'm Bill Gronseth, Superintendent of Duluth Public Schools. I know it's not every day that you have a school district come to you to ask for approval to spend less money, but that is the case today. Since 1890, our school district has had the privilege of calling one of Duluth's most iconic buildings home. The model that's being passed around is the original building that actually my great-grandfather had the pleasure of being watched it being built back in 1890. If you've ever visited Duluth, I'm sure you've noticed the clock tower along the skyline of downtown. And now, 130 years later, we find ourselves faced with over $48.5 million of work that needs to be done in order to maintain this beautiful building. This $48.5 million qualifies for long-term facilities maintenance funding, and we could start this work right away. But as we thought more about it, and we started to wonder if there was a more effective way to use district and taxpayer funding, And if historical Central High School was made available to a private developer, they could gain access to historic tax credits, a chance to work with the city and the county on local partnerships, and it also sits in an opportunity zone, so they would be able to pursue opportunity zone credits as well and access other funding sources not available to public school districts. We brought a team together to analyze the situation and our options. We assessed properties for sale throughout Duluth. We looked at leasing options, and then we looked to our own property, the central site on the hill that has been for sale for over a decade. It has both the capacity for the construction of more efficient buildings, reducing our square footage by over two-thirds, and also to create space for regional economic development on the balance of the property. Our ALC and our adult basic learning education program would find homes within the city that are best suited to meet the needs of those learners. And this construction would include relocating staff and programs and address our crumbling transportation building, along with creating improved access to the site and allow for over 50 acres to be ready for redevelopment. And all of this could be accomplished for $31.5 million, saving taxpayer investment of over $17 million on what would otherwise need to be spent on historic Old Central High School. I think it's important for you to know as well that our school board has unanimously approved a resolution of support of this bill as they consider all options relating to the possible sale of historic Old Central High School and possible interest in developing parts of Central on the Hill. This bill will allow us the authority to meet the same needs long-term facilities maintenance revenue would have given us under the current law. We urge your support of House File 3992, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Ms. Erickson, state your name for the record, please, and proceed.
My name is Kathy Erickson, and I am the CFO for Duluth Public Schools. And just as a follow-up, we're just I'm available here to ask questions or answer any questions that you might have in terms of the process and the bill before you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, we'll move to member questions. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess the superintendent. Now, if I missed this, I'm sorry, but is this school currently open for students?
The building is currently used for the district central administration as well as our area learning center and adult basic education services.
Representative Erdahl, I'll follow up.
Thank you. And so you plan on selling this and using it for what uses do you foresee for the building if it's sold?
Superintendent.
There are interested parties in purchasing it for private development.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. And so the students now, there's another school that they're attending, a new school? Is that correct?
We would be looking for the appropriate placement for them that was closest to them and to meet their needs. So we would likely be using our lease authority for ALC programming.
Okay.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and well, I hope you won't tear it down. I don't like to tear down old buildings, but, Representative Murphy, the words Ford building keep coming into my head as I'm listening to the presentation.
Representative Murphy. This isn't something I would usually bring before you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other member questions? Representative Christensen.
Just a quick question. I love old buildings, too, so I'm wondering if there's any assurance to the city, if it's a historic building, that it will not be torn down or it will be preserved.
I'm Superintendent.
I would be heartbroken if it was torn down myself as well. It is on the historic registry, so it is protected, and it is one of the most iconic buildings in Minnesota that the community loves. I know that tourists come wandering in all the time just to see the building, and we have had conversations with the city and the county as well, who are just as interested in preserving the building.
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, thank you. This question is for Mr. Strom. Mr. Strom, has the legislature authorized anything like this previously?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I think there are two parts to the bill in terms of authorization. One is the bill's giving the district the authority to sell bonds without voter approval. And that's happened a number of times at the legislature where local units or where school districts have been given authority to bond without voter approval. The second part of the bill is the shifting of from one levy category to another. And that's something that's happened occasionally. I can't think of an example offhand, but I know there have been a few other times where levy in one area has been foregone so that a district can levy in a district area. And I'm drawing a blank at the moment, but I know there have been some instances of those in the past several years.
Representative Erickson, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Strom. So, Superintendent Gronseth, where's the public on this?
Superintendent.
And I'll be completely transparent and say that we hear support in both ways. There are many people who understand that this building is important to the community and that it needs $48.5 million worth of work. When they hear that we could have a more effective and efficient plan and spend $17 million less on the same authority and at the same time encourage development in downtown Duluth and help to encourage redevelopment on the central side, we are getting more support. There are those that during the long-range facilities plan, as Representative Murphy spoke to, that they were very unhappy with all of that. And anything to do with buildings is hard for them to accept and move towards. I believe that this is the best scenario for our school district and for our community. There's no doubt that after we completed $48.5 million of work on this building, which is really talking about tuck pointing and roofs and HVAC systems, that there will be continuing investment in this that I don't believe that the school district should be doing with monies that we could be spending in other ways in the school district.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one last question. So, Superintendent Gronseth, is it more the love of the history behind this great building? And if it's sold, it could still be preserved, but is it the history that it was a school or that it now would become something else? What's the consternation on the part of the public? Or is it that there wouldn't be voter approval? I don't know.
Superintendent Gronseth.
I believe that the school district would be investing in administrative space that causes the most consternation. However, we already have the authority to spend more than what we're asking.
Representative, any other member questions? Any other member questions? Representative Murphy, final word.
I appreciate your cooperation and your advice on how to proceed.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to renew the motion that House File 3992 be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? House File 3992 is on its way to the Education Finance Division. Thank you, Representative Murphy.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Okay, Representative Hassan, House File 2471. Members, if you can remember, we actually heard this bill last session in provisions of House File 2471. That's up today. We heard those as House File 606. But this is a newer bill that's been scaled back, so we're going to have Representative Hassan briefly describe it and have folks here for either testimony or questions. And Representative Hassan, would you like to move your bill with the intentions of it being placed on the General Register?
Madam Chair, I move House File 2471 to be placed on the General Registry.
Member House File 24, members House File 2471 has been moved to be placed on the General Registry. Representative Hassan, go ahead and. Oh, sorry, you do have an amendment.
Yes.
Would you like to move your amendments?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Hassan moves amendment coded A1. Any discussions on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Amendment A1 has been adopted. Representative Hassan, go ahead and proceed.
Madam Chair and members, House File 2471 is requires school board to provide annual notice to parents of the school district's policy relating to student absence for religious purposes. The provision in this bill is included a bill that we heard last year, House File 606. The only change that we made since last time that we heard this bill is we took out the employee part, and reasons because in most school employees have union contracts, so we took that part out. So this is a very simple, straightforward bill, and most school districts are already doing this, so this is just to get everything on the record and just to make sure that everyone is consistent on what's happening. And just to tell you a little bit about why we're doing this, religious holidays are important and memorable times for most families in our society, and having an excused absence from school and enjoying this time with your family and loved ones is a necessary step to support our students. My son goes to Hopkins High School, and some of the religious holidays from the Jewish community, if you go to school on that day, half of the school is gone. Hopkins have a lot of Jewish students. So recognizing those holidays for Muslim and Jewish students and giving them an excused absence and putting that on the calendar, I think it's not too much to ask. And that's what we're doing with this bill. I have a testifier who's going to say a few words, and then we stand for questions.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, council members, committee members, I am Imam Asad Zaman, Executive Director of the Muslim American Society of Minnesota. I'm here to speak in favor of House File 2471. Madam Chair, this bill requires two things. The first, it requires a school district to notify families about their policy on student absence. And the second part of this bill is it is a permissive statute. It clarifies that the school district has the right, but not the obligation, to take a religious holiday of a large group of their students into account when making their school calendar. As Representative Hodan Hassan mentioned before, this was introduced as House File 606 and was part of the Education Omnibus Bill last year. And the A1 amendment brings the dates into alignment for this year.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, member questions. Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, this is not a question. It's the same comment I made last year to both of them. I don't think we need to have a law for this. In that I don't think there's anything that's currently in statute that would prevent this. And I think the website would be a great place for districts to cite their policy just voluntarily so that, you know, all families know what is important to that particular district. So I just don't see the need for another statute. But I said that last year, too, so we'll see what happens.
Representative Hassan, did you have anything to say?
I just want to say that, Madam Chair and members and Representative Erickson, I just want to say that if you're from a minority religious group, you would understand that it's hard that your child gets an excused absence from, you know, observing a religious holiday or the school not recognizing that holiday or not, you know, putting that on their calendar. And this is not saying it's a requirement, it's just a suggestion, but it's a suggestion that many school districts are doing, and it will be good if all across the board, everyone was doing this. That's all we're suggesting, and I hope everyone can support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any further question? Seeing none, Representative Hassan, final statement? Or?
I thank you for your time and hope you can support.
Thank you, Representative Hassan. Representative Hassan renews motion that House File 2471 as amendment be placed on the General Registry. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
House File 2471 has been amended, as amended, to be placed on the General Registry. I almost forgot the as amended part. All right, members, next up we have Representative Bierman's bill. Representative Bierman, would you like to move your bill with the intention of it being placed on the General Registry?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move Bill 3741 to be placed on the General Register, please.
Thank you. Representative Bierman has moved House File 3741 to be placed on the General Registry. Representative Bierman, the bill is before us. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is about school district reporting and is an attempt to reduce just a little fraction of that. I don't have any glitzy photos. It's not quite as cool as the historic Central High School, but bear with me. Simply put, this bill will just reduce some of the district reporting due to Pelsby regarding teachers, principals, and assistant principals who were released from contracts and are no longer in the school district's employ. And I have here with me today Marianne Thomas from Farmington Public High School to testify on behalf of this proposal.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hello, I am Marianne Thomas. I'm the Director of Human Resources for the Farmington Area School District. I'm also a board member for the Minnesota Association of School Personnel Administrators, representing the school district personnel employees in Minnesota. And this bill is not that old, and it really has two requirements. The current bill has two requirements. It requires school districts to report to Pelsby the teachers who have completed their probation and are becoming continuing contract teachers, or they are tenured. That's the word that we use for that. And then it also requires us to report how effective they are, what licensure they are, and where they went to college. And the other part of the bill requires us to report to Pelsby teachers who are non-renewed or resign from our school district for any reason. We have to report their licensure area and the college from which they graduated. And we do the same thing for principals to the Board of School Administrators. The original bill sort of came out of the blue, and I'm not really sure who wanted it or who thinks it's helpful. But the part of the bill that's being proposed today is that half of it is being eliminated. The part that's being proposed for elimination is the reporting when we non-renew a teacher or a school administrator, that we have to report that to Pelsby or the Board of School Administrators. There are 333 school districts in the state that have to do this reporting, and it's just another report on top of another report. Most of the school districts in the state run very lean HR, finance, payroll departments. Many don't have HR departments. And so this is just one more reporting requirement that, quite frankly, I don't think anybody looks at or anybody uses. We submit an Excel spreadsheet to Pelsby. It's my understanding they stick it in a manila folder and there it sits. No one's using the data. No one's compiling the data into one great big spreadsheet to analyze. I think the original intent was to find out which colleges are preparing the best teachers. But it's falling flat on its face because the data is just going and sitting in Pelsby's drawer or BOSA's drawer. And the other thing that's a little bit annoying for school district administrators is that Helsby has the data already. They had the data already. We report on our STARS report twice a year, all of our staff, including teachers, what their licensure area is, what they're teaching, what they earn. And then they also have all of the licensure data for every teacher in the state of Minnesota where they went to school when they applied for their teaching license. And so Helsby has this data, they just haven't coordinated it. So if somebody actually wanted to know this information, they could get it from Helsby and our other reports that we submit. So it's a lot of extra work that no one really seems to care about, no one's looking at. And there is no really standard for what we're reporting. So I just think it's a failed attempt at something. I'm not even sure what.
Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, I think I'll go to member questions. Members, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I guess I had a failed attempt at legislation here. This was something brought forth by Ed Allies in 2015, and I think a couple of other outside groups who felt very strongly that we needed to track whether or not teachers were retained in districts, after the probationary stage. And I feel bad that Pelsby's just putting it in a drawer. I certainly will speak to them about that. But at the time, there certainly was value, and I continue to believe with our teacher shortage and finding out reasons why teachers do leave the profession. They're probationary teachers, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they were forced to leave. And so I continue to believe that the information we're collecting should be of value for teacher preparation programs as well as for Palsby and for us who provide for this public policy. But I'm going to look more closely into it. I'm going to have a conversation with Palsby because I don't like to have failed legislation, Madam Chair, and I don't think you do either. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bierman or Ms. I'm so sorry, Thomas, did you have any other comments?
If I could just make one comment. I don't disagree that there could be value. But I think Pelsby already has the data they need through the STARS report. Because that actually, when we complete our STARS report, we actually tell Pelsby why we're non-renewing a teacher, whether it's for retirement, whether they moved to another district, whether it was financial or performance reasons. So they, in that report, they actually have that data and can cross-reference it with their college preparatory institutions. This report, we don't tell them why we've non-renewed them. We might have non-renewed a teacher because we just didn't have the funding or people didn't sign up for physics or for tech ed. So I think this particular report doesn't answer the question that I think those groups might have been trying to get at.
Got it. Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think that exact issue of retaining our teachers, getting new and qualified teachers that we can retain, that's the name of the game. And however we can do that going forward is what we should focus on. This little piece of reporting I don't think has been an effective tool in that, so I think we can do away with that small portion of the ones that have left. But the ongoing reports will continue for the teachers in the district, and I think that's important data, and as long as the districts wanted, I think we continue with it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Kunesh-Badin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you, I think you sort of started to answer the question that I have. When a teacher leaves a district, whatever tier they are on, is there ever a report or is there a post a school year report where the teacher says, I am not returning and I'm not returning for these reasons?
Representative Bierman or Ms. Thomas?
I think, Madam Chair, I think obviously within the school they're collecting that data, and the principal and the faculty who are trying to retain teachers, they definitely want to know why somebody leaves and what the reasons are. So I think they're collecting that data. I'm not sure whether it's something that's reported to the state at this point or Pelsby that is actually being used through this particular document.
Ms. Thomas, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I agree with that. It's not through this document that anybody's using that information.
Thank you.
Members, any further questions? Seeing none, Representative Bierman renews his motion that House File 3741 is recommended to be placed on the General Registry. Any discussion on that question? Our motion, sorry. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? House File 3741 is recommended to be placed on the General Registry. Members, I think this is a record. We're actually done on time. Maybe I should put some more bills on, huh? yeah, we're done early. If folks could just listen up real quick, you're going to want this information for your calendars. So we have this Friday, March 13th, we're going to be starting at 8:30 a.m. here. We just noticed, I think, we added two more. We're going to be noticing that we're adding two more bills on the agenda. One is to the e-learning of Representative Haley's, and then another one is one that just got introduced today regarding COVID-19. So we're going to be adding those to the agenda. Otherwise, the agenda has been posted for a little bit. Next week's schedule, just so you know, we are not meeting at the original time, our original time on Tuesday, March 17th, because there's been a training, and we find out if it's okay. So we have a training that we've been required to attend. I think it's just on our, we're not sure if it's on our side of the aisle or if the notice has gone up to everybody. We're a little bit in the dark. I think it's everyone. So there's a training Tuesday afternoon, so we can't meet. But we will meet Tuesday night starting at 5:30. And then we have our regular meeting on the 18th, which may move into the evening, but we're not sure. And then we'll meet on Friday the 20th. And then the following week, just for your schedules, we'll only be meeting during our committee time, just hearing some bills that might have made first deadline in the Senate. And then the week before finance deadline, we might have just a few informational hearings, but they'll only be during our regular time. So I'll try to keep us up to date as quickly as possible so we know what's going on and people can get it on their calendars. Representative Erdahl also had some comments. We could do them now, actually.
Thank you. Just a question, Madam Chair. Is the intent to do a policy omnibus bill, or are we doing individual bills to the floor? What is the intent?
We have sent everything to the floor, but we're still in discussions. I've been meeting with Representative Senator Nelson, and I have a meeting in to meet with Representative Erickson to iron some stuff out. So, but did you want to add what you talked to me on the floor about today, since we have a little bit of time?
Might as well. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm presenting a bill on Friday on mentoring, and I was going to enlighten you a little bit as to the progress of the bill that you voted on last year dealing with civics. And, you know, we have, in this several year long process now, I have attempted to make adjustments, compromises, if you will. And I think two things that I am going to be doing, not necessarily here. Technically, you see, the bill passed through this committee a year ago, and it's a biennium, so it's still alive and can still be considered by the Senate and the conference committee or whatever we're doing. But the two changes that I think may be very helpful to it, first, we had objections from school districts because they didn't like the idea that there could be competition. If the results were made public, then it's, you know, this school district, well, look what they did, and this school district's way up here, and, you know, whatever. And so the compromise with that is that there will be one test score for that the State Department of Education would report, and that test score would be all the students in Minnesota. How did they do? How many took the test? How many passed the test? And the State Department of Education would have knowledge as to if there are schools doing exceedingly well or poorly, and the State Department could address that if they chose to do so. And then the other concern that was consistently raised to me was that this would be a high-stakes test. We don't need these high-stakes tests. I assured them that that was never my intent, and I was then, well, I was told, yes, but you may not be here forever, which is true. And so we will put into the bill a series of steps that will make it very difficult, if not impossible, for it to become a high-stakes test. Those things that are now current that do make tests high stakes in our MCAs would not be allowed under the changes I plan to make in this bill. So I have more hopes of being successful. Basically, we have a test that we do require that we don't know if it's being given, and we don't know at all what any results are, and this would make it more relevant and make it more meaningful for the students and the people of Minnesota. So that is my whole presentation that I'm going to give you. That may be the last you hear until some other time, but not here.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Oh, Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question?
Yes.
Regarding the bill, it's been a while, last year, since I've looked at it, and I couldn't recall if there was anything in the bill about media literacy. Is that part of that civics bill or not?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, that's not in there.
No.
Representative Bierman.
Lastly, then, does it require, it requires to be taught in like 11th and 12th, correct?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, that didn't make it.
Yeah, like I'm watching a tennis match. Representative Bierman.
Madam Chair, so it would be as low as ninth still, as far as the when it could be taught?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The legislation says that the test must be given from 7th through 12th grade and reported after the senior year.
Right.
So at the end of a senior year, at the end of the school year, the school would report out in their school of seniors how many took the test, how many passed the test, give that to the Department of Education, and they would combine the results from the state of Minnesota and issue one score.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for the refresher, Representative Erdahl, and sharing your plans.
I know, you've been waiting with bated breath, all of you, to hear that. I know.
Thank you. Members, don't forget, we are meeting in this room on Friday at 8:30 a.m., and the meeting is adjourned.